Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Sports Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. We've got Matt Harmon and our producer, Raghu. Let's just off the top mention the fact that maybe you've noticed for the past 2 weeks or so, we haven't had a show. We collectively, both, you know, in terms of this particular podcast and the rest of the Yahoo Fantasy crew, decided that in the aftermath of George Floyd's murder and the ensuing protests, which, by the way, everyone here supports, we didn't think it was appropriate to come on and joke about fantasy football. So we took a beat. We didn't want to do what maybe some people did and throw up a black square on a Tuesday and not do some reflection and learning. And so we've taken time to do that. And if you're not cool with that, then you can unsubscribe, because I don't think, and Matt, I'd appreciate if you chime in here, we're living in a time when you can just stick to sports anymore.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought when this was all happening a couple weeks ago was like, the last thing I wanted to do personally was get on the mic and, you know, throw back and forth about fantasy football, because my thought is like, who cares? Like, I don't care about that at all right now. I mean, even it's been 2 weeks now and I still feel like stupid every time I post a tweet about Deontay Johnson's route chart or whatever. Like, really, who cares? But I agree with you completely that I think, you know, a couple of months ago, like when we're all starting into lockdown and quarantine and everything, it was kind of nice to have an escape and have a little bit of something to just tune out and focus on football and not think about, well, what the state of the world because of this pandemic. But in this moment, it felt like the complete opposite. Like, you shouldn't escape from it. I know sports are all of our escapes, but this is not the time to escape. It's not the time to focus on something else. It's time to really reckon with where we are in our current moment in history, and especially where we've been for decades, years, centuries, everything like that.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, if you look at what's going on in sports, people are reticent to have something that's recreational for them politicized, except the president did that. Yeah. He has politicized football and the NFL. And we've seen that over the past few years, and Colin Kaepernick forcing an anthem protest. And I don't want to say forcing, spearheading that effort. And the voices that have been lifted and the conversations that have ensued as a result of that. So, you know, whether or not Matt or I feel like sports is an arena that should be politicized, the truth is it is being politicized. And those ripple effects will show up on the field and off the field. And that, in fact, is our job to talk about. And if you haven't subscribed yet to the Yahoo NFL podcast with Therese Paylor and Charles Robinson, I will urge you to do that, because not only are they reporting at a fantastic level, but their commentary has been some of the most honest, open-minded, and at times uncomfortable, and we don't grow unless we get uncomfortable. And so I would encourage you, while we were dark, I was listening to them regularly and really proud of the work that they were doing and proud to call them my colleagues.
Yeah, I think this is something that we're going to be talking about. And I think it's great to challenge ourselves. It's great to be uncomfortable. I think that was as you know, as a straight white male, like this is what I said this originally on, a couple weeks ago, that this is the time to be uncomfortable. This is the time to challenge yourself. And really, we already should have been doing that. Like, I think so often we're afraid of feeling guilt, feeling uncomfortable, feeling shame, but that's all a part, at least, and this is from my perspective, you know, again, as a white man, this is all part of it, is being uncomfortable and being ready to feel the shame and the guilt that's going to come with this. And this, again, as you said, is how we all grow. And I think Therese and Charles are great, and I think a lot of people have had absolute shining moments in the sports world the last few weeks, because they've taken this opportunity. I mean, we've all been given this moment to continue to grow and talk about these things. And I'm happy to see so many people in the Yahoo circle and especially without, like, out of the Yahoo circle that are really having intelligent conversations about that. And we're all going to be having that because, like you said, this is a part of the sports world now. It's not going anywhere, and that is good. So, like it or not, this is what you're signing up for now if you're consuming any sports content. I mean, Kyler Murray said this past week that he's going to be kneeling during the anthem this year. Bill O'Brien said that he'd be kneeling with his players. J.J. Watt told him, you know, told a fan on Twitter, don't assume what I'm going to be doing because I sport an American flag or whatever. It's we're all past that point, you know, and now we get to see what's going to happen, you know, if there's a season and all that, what that's going to be. And it's going to be a part of the conversation no matter what.
And you mentioned we have been given this opportunity to get uncomfortable. And let me just highlight that by saying, what a privilege that all we have to do is get uncomfortable. That's exactly. All. We got to get that little feeling in our tummy. And that is, you know, our director of content, Sarah Crennan, often references a quote by the great Billie Jean King. And I have thought about it many times during quarantine and frankly before. and that is, pressure is a privilege. And so now is an opportunity to feel the pressure and use our privilege. And again, if you don't like it, there are plenty of podcasts out there who are just going to talk about, you know, Dalvin Cook holding out. Guess what you're going to do, by the way? I can already tell you what the advice is going to be.
Yeah.
So we are, you know, going to touch on those topics, not in a soapbox way, but as they relate to sports and football and fantasy. And so we just wanted to get that out of the way so that we were completely transparent and y'all knew where we were coming from and could make choices from there on out. Matt, also, you mentioned quarantine and COVID-19.
Still a thing. Still a thing.
It is still a thing. People may not want to believe it's a thing. We're all, various states and cities are opening up at different degrees. And yet the numbers are showing, the data is showing that, you know, COVID is not gone. It's interesting. I have a very good friend who lives in Jacksonville and she is an epidemiologist. And we talked this morning and it was interesting because if you've seen the reports in Jacksonville, there was a woman who went to a bar with her friends and now 15 people have – Jacksonville made the news because this event happened in Jacksonville. And I was talking to my friend who is a CDC trained, went and got her secondary master's degree from Emory. Obviously, that's in Atlanta, which is where the CDC is based, and has trained with them and is working as an epidemiologist. Also, as a side note, we'll get to sports in a second. I will say that she is living with a husband who is battling cancer. So her stakes are very interesting. Going to work every day to stay healthy and then having an immunocompromised loved one at home. So it's a very fascinating point of view. But she very much said it is still a thing. And everybody is interested in sports coming back. It's also fascinating to me that that is where the conversation is going all of the time. And not just because you and I work in sports, but this woman who lives in Jacksonville is saying, like, everyone wants to talk about sports. All everyone wants to talk about is when are sports going to come back? And she's an epidemiologist saying, like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe they won't. Should they? Yeah. I mean, if you ask the MLB... That's a whole nother thing. We do know that the NBA is planning to return via a bubble in Orlando at the end of July. And now the news today, we're recording on Thursday, Dr. Fauci said he expects a similar strategy, a bubble strategy to exist for the NFL. Sean McVay immediately saying, is this real life?
Yeah, he said we're going to Sean McVay said we're going to social distance, but we're going to still play football. I don't quite get it. So, yeah, most of us don't really get it, Sean. But yeah, Dr. Fauci said that it'd be hard to see football coming back unless they're insulated in that bubble type of situation. And I mean, I don't know. You know, that's my feeling with all of this stuff. I have no idea what's going to happen, but it does feel very weird that the conversation is always on sports, and maybe that's a
and yet we're supposed to stick to them, right? But like, how is everybody? I mean, that was the point that I was trying to make, that my friend is, the sports is representative and symbolic of so much more than whatever field is being played on a field, pitch, court, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw somebody, somebody replied to our friend Marcus Grant from the NFL Network when he tweeted about this. Someone said there will be riots if there are no sports coming back. Interesting timing to say something like that. But I mean,
phrasing.
Yeah, right. But it's also, I mean, look, it's probably not. Is that crazy? I mean, people were out there in the streets protesting because they couldn't get a haircut a couple of freaking weeks ago. So I think people would be super pissed if there was no NFL in the fall. But, and again, I think that just speaks to our weird consciousness as a nation or as a group of people, whatever, because is sports returning the most important thing in the world? The most important thing, even in this pandemic? No, but I think it's a big representation of life returning to normal, which people clearly so badly want to happen, even if it's not time for that. So I don't know what's going to happen with football in the fall. I hope there's football, but I hope we're at a point where we can do it. We can do it safely. I don't know what that looks like because I just don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about this.
That's interesting. I mean, I think we are going to have football.
I do too. Yeah.
I don't think, when you use the word safety, I think there is, I mean, we see people having debates as to whether or not they should or have the right to not wear a mask at a grocery store, right? Like, we're talking, like, safety for whom?
Yeah.
Safety, and that is part of, like, a greater conversation that I'm not going to get into, because I think that that's a completely, like, philosophical, we can save that for, like, the eyes in the sky, maybe we're not completely lucid podcast, but, you know, I also talked to, as part of a story that I'm doing on the effects of COVID in youth sports, I talked to an orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine doctor who is at USC, the Trojans here. And he said, basically, I mean, he said a lot. It was a fascinating interview and conversation. But he said that at the collegiate ranks, because this is either a domino situation, whether it goes like a cascade down up or up down, you know what I mean? Like youth sports is and collegiate athletics are waiting on the NFL to make a decision so that they can put things into place. And then the high schools who have their own scouting system are waiting. And so there is this weird cascade event. And he says that right now USC is planning, and obviously USC is a pipeline to the NFL. Michael Pittman's a thing this season, and we're both high on him, right? Yeah. So obviously it's a school that has direct ties to the NFL. And he said that the major focus at USC is getting football back, and then they're going to start working on some other sports, but football is the main sport for the fall that they're focusing on. And the plan right now is to have everybody temp screened, everyone who goes in and out of the building temperature screened, active regular COVID testing, all athletes quarantined for 10 days before 7 to 14, but he's going to land on 10 days before heading back to practice. And this is something I hadn't heard yet in terms of the NFL. All of the athletes will be living and training in small groups. And the assumption is that it'll be the same 8 individuals all of the time. He assumes that high schools will try to follow these same social distancing protocols if they can. But that is the plan for USC. And if they are getting their cues from the NFL, then I'm a little bit frustrated with Sean McVay, who says, well, how are we supposed to do this? And it's like, you get to do it. But that's the answer. Either don't do it or you get to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're going to do it, I don't know. Zeke Elliott just today tested positive for COVID, right? And he's asymptomatic and feeling fine. Charles Robinson on the aforementioned Yahoo NFL podcast mentioned that, you know, Zeke's a pretty social guy. That's not breaking news.
Yeah.
And so you have to imagine he's been in contact with other people. And so, I mean, I am thinking from a fantasy perspective, if you don't like working the waiver wire, this is not the year for you in fantasy.
Yeah, that is one thing I think about is we just have no, like, again, have no idea. I agree with you. I think there's going to be a football season. Dr. Alan Sills put out a statement through, I think I saw Tom Pelissero from NFL Network tweeted out. He's the NFL's chief medical officer about, we're like, obviously the NFL's not said anything publicly about what they're doing in terms of, hey, here's plan A, plan B, plan C. Here's the fallback to plan C. But clearly those discussions are happening. It's just not, out there in a statement. And essentially that's kind of what he said, was like, we're making sure that we can be flexible and put things in place. Even if right now the business as usual statement is, we're expecting a 16 game season starting on time, fans in the stand, all that. I think we all probably agree that this season is going to look very, very different. Things can change wildly within a few months, but I don't think by the time September rolls around, we're going to be at a point where it's just like, all things back to normal, fans in stands, whatever. But that's my point too, is like, I think we just haven't even really reckoned with, as like a fantasy football industry, how weird things are going to be looking this season. I think about this even from, like a reception perception angle. And this is just one of the many thoughts I have. I chart 8 games worth of a player. I'm like, how many times might 8 games be like indicative of a full season for some of these guys next year? Because it's just going to look that weird with guys, popping in and out because they test positive. I know they'll probably expand the active rosters. They are going to expand the practice squads. And it does all feel very weird that it's like, great, we're just coming up with all these good solutions about how we can just get sports back. But I do think those decisions and those moves will have an effect. Just as like we're saying, we're not going to be able to just, because you shouldn't be able to just escape from the social justice and Black Lives Matter conversation right now. That's going to be a part of sports. Same thing with the coronavirus. Like, it's going to be a part of our sports conversation from here until an undetermined end date. And I don't think we quite know what that's going to look like, obviously, in the fall.
And when I spoke to that point, Dr. Alex Weber, who is the orthopod and sports medicine team doctor at USC, I said, well, what happens if, let's say it was Michael Pittman who tested positive? And he emphatically said, star players have to be pulled and quarantined if they test positive. All players have to be treated the same. That is it. Now, immediately, like, the cynical part of me is like, okay, like, oh, who's gonna administer these tests now? Yeah. How is that gonna? But even if that doesn't happen, the other thing I asked him as an orthopod is, well, what about the incidence of like soft tissue injuries, or these players who have not been conditioning necessarily at the same rate that they always did, or at least in the same way, right? Like the Rocky montage, that was a movie that came out before you were born.
I've seen it though. What's the damn song in the background?
Eye of the Tiger.
Is it Eye of the Tiger? No, it's the Final Countdown. It's the Countdown.
That one too.
Yeah. Banger.
But we're all familiar with Rocky, like, using a slab of meat as his as his bag, right? And like running the stairs in Philadelphia. And anyone who goes to Philadelphia like runs the stairs and puts their arms up. It's a thing. But if that and that can work, but it also changes the way your body is strengthened. And and so I asked him, like, what are the injuries that you're most expecting seeing? And he said hamstring pulls, Achilles tendonitis, ACL issues, rolled ankles, and soft tissue overuse. Yeah. So when the ACL thing caught my attention, because that has, over the past few years, we think about Adrian Peterson being a damn Lamborghini and James Andrews just, putting holy water over his knee and it working again. And so that has become one of those injuries that prior to, 6-7 years ago was pretty much a death knell, is now, in terms of career longevity, is now not one we blink at. But I don't know if there is this second wave that, P.S. we're not through the first.
Yeah,
wave,
right.
So whatever this is not like, but if there is this potential second wave in the fall, which is when obviously football is supposed to return, and all of these what are they like? The kind of surgeries, elective surgeries, and all of these elective surgeries are postponed because the hospitals are full of COVID patients, then what happens? Like, can someone's shoulder AC joint issue be remedied as immediately as they're used to?
Yeah.
So I think, again, like when we're looking at fantasy, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the continuity argument, but also benches are going to be, maybe there's a fantasy conversation and we as a community, and I'm sure our product team is going to hate me for this one, comes up with deeper benches. Like maybe it's not as crazy. Like everyone who's been waiting for Mike Boone season might actually get one.
Oh God. Yeah. Like all of the like deep sleeper truthers. This is when, you know, when Odell Beckham, something happens to him. This is Rashard Higgins time. Finally, this is my moment.
Rashard Higgins, Donovan Peoples Jones, out with the old and in with the new, friend.
Oh no, never give up. Never say never. So I think one of the best points you made up there was the Achilles part, because I always think back to the 2011 lockout. That was when like Achilles were just left and right when players got back into facilities because they'd been away so long. And we already saw just this week, Brandon Brooks, the Eagles guard, one of the stud offensive linemen that they have and throughout the entire NFL, he just popped his Achilles this past week. So
yeah,
this, I think that could be a situation where this happens a lot. And that's just adding to the fact that we are going to have to pay attention to these players that we never have before. I think too, how many times I've just dunked on people for being so stupid that they think they have to draft a second quarterback in a one quarterback league. Give me a break, my friend. You can just play the waiver wire. I don't know. I might like to have Daniel Jones behind whatever quarterback I have in case my quarterback gets COVID and he's gone for a few months. And again, this all feels so stupid to talk about.
Or because he gets sacked so much that he eventually hurts himself because your O-lineman can't gel, because whole groups of these, if these are guys are going to be practicing in groups of eight, like the entire first string O-line squad all comes up with COVID at the first time. I mean, in the first test, and they're gone, and you've got a complete second string of O-linemen. And also the other thing that Dr. Weber mentioned was that, you know, you've heard about long-term effects of COVID and the potentiality of those. And what do they look like? Some people are getting this lung scarring.
Yeah.
And he said that weight and obesity is one of the direct links to lung scarring that they are discovering. Mm. And when I think about the old linemen, those are robustly built humans.
Big fellas,
Right. And so also, if your cardiovascular health is attached to your success in career, then are you willing to put yourself at risk? And so I was actually thinking, like, you know, we used to do all this research about like the O-line and how, you know, they'll block and that helps the quarterback, especially if you don't have a mobile quarterback. If anything, Kyler Murray's fine. Like we saw last year, he could do fine. I don't know if I'm going to draft any high floor statuesque QBs, knowing what we do know about not just, you know, the way COVID affects people who are perhaps a little more weighty than others. But also assuming that like squads of positional players could be wiped out in the same time.
Yeah. It's all of these things are just so important to take into account and to think about. And just, again, I just don't know how to weigh that. And we probably will not get a correct answer to that, but it's just, do you think just the entire 2020 football season, supposing that there is one, we just look back on in 5-10 years as just like one big fat asterisk? You know, like none of what we saw in 2020 matters. Whoever wins the Super Bowl, that team. Like all their fans are just going to hate the fact that it's like, yeah, but the 2020 season, that was so messed up that it, who cares what happened? I mean, if the picture that you're painting, and I'm agreeing with you, this is probably pretty close to reality. It's just, does the 2020 season even matter? Because all of these things are so weird, that we just look back on it. It's like, that wasn't even a real football season. We were having guys getting called off the third practice squad to come start at left tackle for Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. And he got clobbered 10 times in one game because he can't move.
Right. I mean, you can look at it that way, or you can look at the potential, the resiliency potential, right? Like maybe you find the next Chris Carson, like maybe the Greg Wards show up, and that is extremely exciting. You know, like I would love to see the deepest of deep sleepers that's not even on the radar get his shot and take it and be rewarded. So we don't know what heroes can, you know, that were probably that are currently unsung can rise to the occasion in a weird confluence of circumstances. And again, from a fantasy point of view, like I'm just already thinking whatever draft grade you end up getting does not matter anyway. But in this year, it really doesn't, because it will. I mean, you're going to have to be working the waiver wire again, assuming we start in September on time.
From
by
jump.
Late August. Yeah. Right. Like yeah, there's no. So let's talk about that, actually, because there is already today it was reported that Deebo Samuel, who had himself a rookie campaign, broke his foot. And that is obviously a hit to the San Francisco 49ers because of his multiple ability, his versatility. But also, our fantasy managers now, is it worthwhile to take a deeper look at Brandon Ayuk, who I believe you did the rapid reaction to as he was drafted during the NFL draft, and who, you know, we know similarly, at least, it has a lot of that yak potential.
Yeah, Ayuk definitely has the same sort of yak potential that Deebo Samuel does. He is a guy that I thought actually could, you know, and Deebo, to Debo's credit, I thought he showed up better as a vertical player, and especially like on digs and posts down the field, that actually showed up better than I expected him to as a rookie. But Ayuk is more of that guy that he can be. I think he could be a very good downfield receiver. Like when people compared him to Golden Tate, those type of guys, I thought he could be used more vertically than some of them. But the catch there is, I think he's got to be lined up against off man coverage. Like there's nothing on his college film that shows you almost any indication that, oh, this is going to be a good player against press man coverage, especially in his rookie year, especially in a COVID adjusted offseason. He's going to be able to go out there against NFL corners, you know, whether they are from the B squad or the C squad or the D squad or whatever, that he's going to be able to go out there and beat press coverage in the NFL. He just doesn't get a lot of reps against that in college. And even when he did, I don't think he performed very well. But he does have enough subtlety in his deception part of his route running where he can do the head fakes. He can take you outside before breaking back inside and make big chunk plays. But again, I think those are going to have to be schemed the right way. Of course, Kyle Shanahan, I think, is a great schemer. And I think that there's a lot of ways. I think there were plenty of ways that they could have put Ayuk and Deebo on the field together. Like, I don't think that their roles were going to overlap anyways. It's certainly probably an opportunity boost for a player like Ayuk, but let's take it to that deep sleeper level too, because I think that they could take a player like Jalen Hurd, former running back. Also, Ayuk is much more of like a slender, smaller player than Deebo Samuel is. I mean, Deebo, beyond the fact that he was just great after the catch, he's a badass. You know, he was a bully out there and a very physical player. I think Hurd might be able to do more of that than Ayuk would be able to do in a theoretical Deebo Samuel type role. So in a year where we're already talking about these deeper sleepers, and I think Hurd could be a perfect guy. And I know someone that I spent a late round dynasty startup pick on pretty recently.
Hurd over Ayuk is what you're saying. Ayuk, the obviously the like hotter name because it's the newer name, and Hurd has not broken out. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and he didn't even have a rookie season. So they're kind of essentially starting on the same playing field. I mean, I don't know that it's going to be Hurd over Ayuk, but I think that let's keep our minds open to a couple of different players specifically fitting into this type of role too. Because I thought what was interesting about Deebo too is that they really kind of lined him up not as a slot player very often. He was more used outside, but obviously was used on layup type targets plenty and a lot in the running game. And I think that's what makes Hurd interesting, is that he was a player that did line up in the slot a lot when he did move to wide receiver at Baylor. And I think that they could get Hurd the ball as a running back, as an H back, as just a player out in space. I think there's a lot of potential there.
And Hurd, though, I mean, looking back at him, he was a converted running back, right? Like that was a position he played in college.
At Tennessee, he was in the SEC. Right. He actually put up pretty good numbers as a running back. And I don't remember exactly what happened with him, but eventually he ended up he transferred to Baylor and he played slot receiver there, H-back slot receiver, whatever. But yeah, he moved to a full-time, quote, wide receiver on the depth chart.
All right. Well, I think that that's a great nug. And that's interesting, especially if you're talking about using Ayuk because of his slighter build as more of a downfield threat and a speed element, adding more of a speed element when you're also noticing that Goodwin's not on the squad anymore, right? Yep. Like that hole needs to be filled. And so there is some definite...
I forgot Marquise Goodwin was on the Eagles.
he's on the Eagles now.
30,000 things have happened, in the past however many weeks that the draft went down. But I totally forgot that Marquise Goodwin is on the Eagles. And, you know, we're talking about Jalen Reagor may or may not start in year one. DeSean Jackson, what's the deal there? Alshon Jeffrey, give me a break. Forgot about maybe Marquise Goodwin, deep sleeper there.
Were you in on the Eagles team preview that we're doing on the website?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was.
Who was your deep sleeper for the Eagles to that end? Oh, there are a ton of question marks.
I think my thought was just take a pass on this whole wide receiver core. I think their offense is gonna look a lot like it did at the end of last year. I think it's gonna be tight ends. I think my hot take was that both Miles Sanders and Boston Scott, like are very, whatever I put down was like are relevant in PPR formats and half PPR formats, because I think both of those guys can catch a lot of passes because the wide receiver core has the same amount of clarity it did to me, you know, midway through last year, which was not a whole hell of a lot.
There isn't much clarity, but I will say the thing that I found fascinating about the wide receiving core is I had no idea at the time that JJ Arcega-Whiteside was as injured as it has come out that he was indeed. Yeah. Like he did a report where he said that he needed help going to the bathroom. I mean, this is like a guy in his early 20s. That's first of all, something that takes a lot of vulnerability to admit. And I don't think anyone wants to do it freely. So also, I don't know, to be so injured that you need help going to the toilet is something. Tough. And so, and he still has, like, he's only 1 year removed from being drafted. And we know that out of Stanford, he had a lot of contested catchability, super sure-handed, obviously something that the Eagles are in desperate need of. So I'm not as, like, I kind of don't think Alshon Jeffrey, even if he's back, is going to be back. Like, there's all the reports about his knee and his rehabbing, and like, it's not right. But also, I think we're forgetting about the snitching situation.
I think he's kind of cooked, anyways.
I mean, whether he's cooked, there does not seem to be good feelings around that particular relationship and energy on the team. Yeah. And so, I think that gives Arcega-Whiteside an opportunity, again, assuming he's fully healthy. To have a real role in the offense and like siphon a serious amount of targets.
Well, I've actually given you a shout out about this on a couple of pods. I think on this one when I was hosting with somebody else, and then on a few other ones too, about the Arcega-Whiteside thing, because I do think what makes him interesting in this particular wide receiver room is what you used to say about Darius Slayton last year, is one of these things doesn't look like the other. I think Arcega-Whiteside is that guy because he's the bigger, like you said, outside contested catchability player. Very different than, again, remove Alshon Jeffrey from the equation.
Exactly.
Different than Reagor, different than Marquise Goodwin, different than DeSean Jackson. A lot of these speed receivers, smaller guys they've brought in, I think that alone does make him, you know, a candidate to be like a DJ Chark type player, who DJ Chark did nothing in his first year and didn't really pop even when he was on the field. I don't know that he was as bad as Arcega-Whiteside was last year, but then we know what DJ Chark did. He comes out in his second season, he has 1,000 yards and actually looks really, really good doing it. So he's definitely a candidate to be that type of player for sure. If truly he was as injured as he was, as he says he was last year, which, you know, I have no reason to doubt.
Right. Are there any, I know that like we're in mock draft season, which again is striking me as a particularly, like, it tickles me that we're doing all of these mock drafts, because if any year, if the team you end up with is, I cannot imagine a season in which the team you draft will look nothing like the team you end up with until 2020, right? So, but that being said, have there been, whether it's because, like, for instance, I did a mock draft earlier today, and Tony Pollard, I'm assuming because of the news of Zeke's COVID diagnosis, like, went in, like, the eighth round.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, like, that feels a little bit knee-jerk, but
okay,
also
we're doing this, yeah.
Right. But, like, also, it's a mock draft, and, like, I think some people enter mock drafts. This is not me, but I think some people enter mock drafts just trying to make wild picks so that they get written up, which is a thing that exists.
Weird. Very weird.
I know. Like, let's reach for a guy so you could talk about, you can get some spotlight on yourself. I'm like legitimately like, oh, this is practice. And also I've never used this particular product before. So, the clock is running down. Have you noticed any, as you're doing these, and I imagine you are, any like weird things that stick out? Any players that you're like, oh, really? Like no one is touching Curtis Samuel. Not even like 12th round. I finally took him in the right. Oh. Like no one's taking Curtis Samuel. People love Tony Pollard. People love Alexander Mattison. You know, obviously the Dalvin Cook holdout is probably contributing to part of the reason that Madison's ADP is rising. Well, what about you? Like, what are some of the, or do you want to comment on the Samuel thing, since a year ago you were, you know, laying back and smoking cigarettes while watching his film?
Yeah. Feels like quite a long time ago at this point. But, yeah, well, great timing, because new Panthers offensive coordinator Joe Brady had a little Zoom press conference today. And let me just throw you out some quotes that he had about Curtis Samuel. And I was alerted to this on Twitter. And obviously, I'll talk about a meme on air here that I posted afterwards. But, you know.
We are back. We are back. If you guys missed that, here you go.
No one missed that. But anyway, some of the quotes. Curtis is going to be critical to our success. Curtis is the one guy I can't wait to see. Curtis fits the mold of what we're looking for in this type of offense as a guy you utilize all around the field. Quote, I'm excited for him to take the next leap. Obviously, hell yeah. You know, we're back. No, but seriously, I agree with you. Curtis Samuel's a guy that nobody wants to take. And, you know, I just put out Reception Perception a couple weeks ago. Curtis Samuel was the first guy that, obviously, the damn footballers, your pals, did not have them in him in the top 50. But he was the 51st player that I put in there because, obviously, I was curious about what he is. I mean, it's just such an easy reason why it didn't happen for Samuel last year. Nobody ran more 9 routes, you know, straight go routes down the field than Samuel, except one player, and that was DK Metcalf. We know DK Metcalf was working with a limited set of routes last year, obviously. Samuel's just running straight down the field with a quarterback who can't play, who can't push the ball down the field. 46% of his patterns in Reception Perception were either a 9, a corner, out, or a comeback. Those are all deep, outside, difficult routes to throw, whereas DJ Moore, 48% of his routes were a slant, a dig, or a screen. Those are easy layup throws for a bad quarterback like Kyle Allen to make. I think if the Panthers, I mean, they just signed a great vertical threat in Robbie Anderson to take, maybe they'll put Samuel Moore in running some of those curls, the digs, the routes that he's really, really good at, and he becomes more of a shallow target player. I think he could easily break out again this past year. Plus, I put out a thread too on Twitter with Reception Perception data about why Samuel, if he never has a 1,000-yard season, he would be like the outlier of all outliers in Reception Perception work I've done. You can check that out if you're interested. But point is here, I think Samuel's a great guy to mention. Another player that nobody seems to want to touch, Sterling Shepard. I think I've drafted him in every single one of these stupid mocks or, you know, eliminators or whatever we're doing right now. And I think he could easily be the Giants' best receiver this year. Another guy that still, you know, has, I think, a lot left to give based on his Reception Perception. But The one thing I will say is there's plenty of these great receiver values late, but one thing that it has been a consistent theme is it feels like everybody knows that. You know, everybody seems to want to draft running backs early and let the wide receivers slip, which I think in theory obviously makes a ton of sense. There's a lot of receiver depth and there's not a ton of, like, you know, after you get past round three, it's like, all right, great. Now I hate all of these running backs. I really don't want to have a tandem of David Montgomery and Ronald Jones, but that sure as hell might happen. So I would just say be careful if you go into that plan, you're going to a draft with that plan, because that can easily get just destroyed quickly. And then you are looking at a receiver core of a bunch of very volatile players.
Well, so I think that's interesting. And I do the phrase this year, we all know zero RB, right? That's not the case. Now it's robust RB. So we're all looking at our robust RB. Some people are taking the first four rounds because of the way the position thins out after that juncture, and four straight running backs. I am not willing to do that. In my first four rounds, generally speaking, and let's assume this isn't a super flex league or a tight end premium league, but just a standard half point PPR, you know, start one quarterback, two wide receivers, two running backs, and a flex. I am, of those first four rounds, drafting a running back of the three and then getting Allen Robinson as my wide receiver every time. Like, that is the only... I want a high floor wide receiver. To me, the only wide receiver worth entertaining is, because of his current ADP and because of his skill set and because of the team, is Allen Robinson. Done, done, done. The running backs before and after him are all, you know, dependent on my mood and draft position.
Hey, I mean, I will never talk somebody out of drafting Allen Robinson, who had the top score in reception perception success rate versus man coverage this past year.
All right. Well, let's end this podcast with the Bears on a high note, because that doesn't really happen often.
Hey, Anthony Miller, I think he's going to be a breakout player too, late round. I like Anthony Miller a lot this year. So there's two Bears positive notes.
Let's not give away all of the... We still got months to go. All right.
Good point.
Before we start doling out all of the nugs and information, we are looking forward to many conversations. We are looking forward to a season, however that season shows up, and we will be discussing the new wrinkles and question marks surrounding it. So thank you guys, if you've been hanging out for 2 weeks, for coming on back. We will be back next Tuesday. And again, check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Therese and Charles. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza _FF. And that is Matt Harmon _BYB. We're out.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.